Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending. With real-time notifications, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Radio.com Sports presents Big Time Baseball with MLB insider John Heyman and former major leaguer Tony Gwynn Jr.
After a week off, we are back. John Heyman, Tony Gwynn Jr. This is Big Time Baseball, and we got a nice show lined up for you today. CeCe Sabathias will join us later on in the show, but fortunately for us, there's been some baseball news over the past 2-3 weeks, and John and I actually have something to talk about. But before we get into that news, we have to talk about the sad news of Hall of Famer Hank Aaron passing away this past week. And it's continued to be a rough 9-10 months for the Hall of Fame as we lose another baseball giant, John.
Yeah, it's absolutely been brutal. Obviously lost Al Kaline, Lou Brock, Bob Gibson, Tom Seaver, Phil Negro. I mean, and that's just off the top of my head, Don Sutton. It's been a brutal several months, no question about it. But Hank Aaron, one of the all-time greatest players. I'm not telling you anything you don't know, Tony. You know, I'd say he's one of the two greatest players I ever saw, along with Mickey Mantle. The consistency, incredible. I mean, we'll never have a player like this again. For 19 straight seasons, had a slugging percentage of .511 or better. Just amazing. And 24 home runs or more every single year. He didn't have one off year, not one bad year in all that stretch. Just an amazing career, an amazing talent, and really an amazing man. I mean, to have overcome all that he overcame, amazing. The threats that he endured, I mean, you think there's racism now? It was brutal to be a star player in the South, one home run away from Babe Ruth. He had 713 going into the 1974 season. And I remember at that time, you I'm sure were not born, but I remember at that time getting the baseball card and it said all-time home run champ. And I was only 13 years old at the time. And I'm thinking to myself, my God, I hope he makes it. You know, we knew at that time that there was a threat, and he was certainly enduring it, but he did it with dignity, grace, class, just an amazing gentleman, really is.
I think that last word, those last two words, grace and class, pop up in my head. I remember being drafted by the Brewers in the second round and signing a deal and heading out to Milwaukee to get introduced. And one of the last people I got to talk to before I hopped in a van and headed to Beloit, Wisconsin to start my professional career was Hank Aaron. I got to sit in the box with him and talk to him. And his message was very simple. Keep your head down, work hard, and put your best foot forward. You have a chance to be a big leaguer one day. And it's simple, but it was something that lasted with me for my entire career. And every time I got a chance to talk to him after that, the thing that he just had this quiet toughness about him that really, really stood out. And I think my most accounts, I mean, he's still the home run king. I mean, Hank Aaron was one of the most consistent players this league has ever seen. We've gone through all of the numbers over the past week just talking about him, but certainly a sad, sad day for Major League Baseball the day he passed. And a lot of people lost a hero. I mean, I'm talking about guys I looked up to. Barry Bonds is the Ken Griffey Jr. That was their hero. And to have that kind of loss, again, in Major League Baseball and the Hall of Fame has been hit pretty tough with some of the guys we've lost. John, I don't know if you knew this, but is it true that there was a $50 $50 was the difference in us seeing a Willie Mays and a Hank Aaron sharing the outfield together.
Yeah, I saw that story on MLB.com. That is quite a story. And, of course, in those days, the money was less. The scouting wasn't as good. They certainly didn't know Willie Mays would be Willie Mays and Hank Aaron would be Hank Aaron. But they came close to being teammates, I believe, on the Giants, right? I think it was the Giants. Would have been quite something. There's a lot of close calls. Look, Clemente was almost a Dodger for life, right? And then he went to the Pirates for nothing and became Roberto Clemente. So, to have those two guys in the same outfield, that would have been quite something.
Yes. Prayers to the Aaron family out there. Let's get into some Major League Baseball and some of this free agency. We'll start with the Yankees. They're the most recent team to make a move. They trade for Ottavino. To the Red Sox. Now, how often hasn't happened in a long time where these two teams in the same division had made nice to make a deal with one another.
Incredible. I think the second time since 1997 that they've made a deal. The biggest deal I can remember, and maybe there's a bigger one, was Sparky Lyle for Danny Cater. And that turned out great for the Yankees. Sparky Lyle was a star in that bullpen, and combined with Goose Gossage and up to win two World Series. But this came out of nowhere. The Yankees just didn't have faith in Ottavino for whatever reason. He had a good first year there. Last year he was okay. He had one terrible outing against Toronto where he didn't get an out and gave up at least six runs. I can't remember exactly how many. But I think that skewed his ERA. And without that, his ERA would have been around three. But he wasn't pitching the big innings. By the end, obviously, they have a lot of great arms in the bullpen with Britton and Chapman and some others. But for whatever reason, they seem to lose faith. But Ottavino is a pretty talented pitcher, so I can't blame the Red Sox for picking him up. My understanding now is the Yankees are now looking to add a reliever. They're far enough under that threshold, and these teams are taking that threshold like a cap somehow. I'm not sure anybody's going to be over it. They're all trying to stay under it. And I get, there's certainly some uncertainty to the finances for this coming year. And teams did not make what they used to make last year. So I understand it to a degree. But, boy, they're taking that threshold incredibly seriously. But I do think the Yankees have room. And they will be looking at relief. It does feel like Tanaka will end up back in Japan and not with the Yankees. They've been in contact, but the Yankees have not seemed anxious to keep Tanaka for whatever reason. I still think Tanaka's pretty good and very clutch, but he'll be back in Japan, I think.
Yeah, I agree. It seems a little weird the way the Yankees are operating, or at least weird from the standpoint of how they normally operate. And the fact that they're still looking for a reliever arm, you kind of wonder if the fit was right for Ottavino, because as you said, he didn't pitch poorly as a Yankee. I mean, his second year wasn't as good as his first, but certainly not something that would force you to trade him in the division to one of your biggest rivals. It just seems a little off for the Yankees. Now, the other move they made is Jameson Taillon. He is traded to the Yankees from Pittsburgh for four prospects. This guy's got some upside. What are you thinking about this deal, John?
Yeah, one more thing on Ottavino that's interesting is they it seems like you heard at the end they thought he'd be better outside of New York, which is curious because he's from Brooklyn. He is a real New Yorker, so that was weird. Taillon is a guy the Yankees have been interested in. They were interested in Musgrove too. They tried hard for him. Again, it's about that threshold. Taillon makes it very reasonable, $2.25 million, and he fits in nicely. That's why they were looking at Luis Castillo so seriously rather than the big free agents. And so they loved it from that aspect. And Gerrit Cole gave a great recommendation on Taillon. And he certainly has talent. He was picked second in his draft. I think it was the 2010 or 11 draft, about a decade ago anyway. And he was picked right behind Harper, right in front of Machado. So he's obviously been a big talent. Unfortunately, he's had two Tommy John surgeries. He's overcome cancer, that's great that he's overcome it, but his career has been derailed several times. He still has 2 years to go. So that's why the Pirates were able to get four pretty good prospects for him. And, the Yankees have a talented rotation, but look, they've got Cole at the top, which is a fantastic, obviously one of the best pitchers in baseball. But after that, you've got talented guys who are coming off of years where they either didn't pitch, or Corey Kluber's case, one inning. You've got Taillon, you've got Severino, who's coming back from the Tommy John from 2019. You've got Herman, who didn't pitch due to the domestic violence case. And you've got young guys. You've got Davey Garcia, you've got Montgomery. There's a lot of questions. There's talent, but there's questions there with the Yankees.
Let's stay on the East Coast, John. The Nationals, quietly, I think, have put together a pretty decent offseason. They've added some arms to their ball club. In particular, they've recently added closer Brad Hand. Now, Brad's fastball may not be hitting what it was, but his slider is still as good as anybody in the league. I personally like this move for the Nationals. It kind of shores up the bullpen, which over the couple of years, I mean, even the World Series year, they were only using one or two guys out of that bullpen consistently. This gives them some more depth there.
Yeah, absolutely, Tony. In fact, if you looked at their lefty relievers, I was wondering why they weren't in on them sooner, really.
Right.
Luis Avilon is the only veteran lefty reliever that they had before getting Brad Hand. And, eventually I got an inkling that they were in on him. And I looked at their roster. I said, why weren't they in on them before? But apparently, right, early on, Hand had talked to the Mets, the Angels, Blue Jays. I think the Blue Jays had offered about $10 million or $16 million over 2 years. And he ended up switching agents. And I'm not sure it was over finances or what, but he ended up getting $10.5 million, which is a little bit more than $10 million that he was offered by the Blue Jays. The $10 million figure also came up because he was put on waivers, and any team could have claimed him for $10 million. It's funny that nobody did. I thought that was weird at the time. Teams have a big emphasis on velocity and swing and miss stuff. I mean, the guy is a fantastic pitcher. He has 0.77 whip. He saved every game that he was called on to save last year. He gets it done. He's a terrific pitcher. Possibly he picked the Nats. He liked them better because he lives in the West Palm area. That's where they train. Also, he has a clear path to the closing job. I've heard that Hudson likes to set up, so that will work out. But, he basically got the same deal he had before with the previous agent. We'll see about the deferments because, Washington defers or has structures in which it becomes a deferral. So we'll see. But it's about $10 million, and he got to a team that he wanted to get to. So perhaps that was worth it for him.
Yeah. Anytime you can get to a team you actually want to play for, that's always a positive. Now, we're getting to that time of the year where spring training is around the corner, John, and it's time to evaluate who do you think had the winning off season. And I have my pick. It's a homer pick, but
you're right.
The Padres have been pretty good this off season. Most recently, adding Joe Musgrove, who I think is a tremendous addition to go with the top of the line starters they have. What's your take on it? Who do you think won this offseason?
Oh, yeah, it's no homer pick. I mean, the Padres are the clear biggest winner of this offseason. I don't think there's any question about that. Adding Darvish, Snell, and Musgrove, plus Caratini and some of the other players that they've added. It's an incredible winter, one of the best I've ever seen. My understanding is they almost got Darvish, Snell, and Musgrove all in one day. Wow. Something happened with the Pirates, and it got delayed, and the other two deals came fairly close together, not the same day, but they almost did all in one day. I think that's probably was AJ's goal, was to have everything done in one day.
That sounds like AJ for sure.
Yes, that does sound like him. We got to get him on here, by the way, one of these days. But I do agree with you. Padres are one. The White Sox have done a terrific job. I don't think there's any question about that. I agree with you on the Nats. The Mets certainly have improved. I think the Braves, I like Charlie Morton. There are teams here and there that have picked up pieces and improved. But obviously we haven't seen a lot of aggression. We still have 3/4 of the free agents are still out there with 3 weeks to go before we think they're going to start spring training, if they do on time. So it's been a very slow winter, but not for the Padres and for the White Sox too. They've done a good job as well.
John, let me ask you this before we get to my Hall of Fame question. I mean, with some of the still marquee names out there, if you had to guess who you think is the first one to come off the board, I mean, we Springer's he's off, but we still got guys like Trevor Bauer available. What is the market looking like for these guys? We knew it was going to be slow, but this seems even slower than it was 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah, and we'll go over these guys one by one, but I think Real Muto is probably, and I don't like to usually say the order, but at this point, I think that's a good question because it does feel like it's coming to a head, and it should happen sometime in the next week. You never know, of course, but Phillies are pressing to keep Real Muto, and I think that's the likelihood. He and the Braves have mutual interest. It's interesting. They have Darnot. And the Braves don't like to do 5-6 year deals. I just don't see somebody taking a lower deal just because you like Atlanta. I don't know whether he likes Coca-Cola or what it is about Atlanta that he likes so much. They were a competitor. In fact, they were a competitor to both the teams that he played for, the Marlins and the Phillies. And, you know, you got a team offering nine figures. I think it's about $110 million that the Phillies are offering. It's hard to turn that down. You're a catcher who's close to 30. You know, what are you going to take a 3 year deal and then be a free agent at 33? That doesn't seem like a good idea to me.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. Do like CeCe, a guy we had have on our podcast. He did it right. He got 7 years for 161. You go for the best deal that you can make. And Real Muto had a good year and he should take advantage of that. Doesn't make sense to do a 2 or 3 year deal. But, you know, if somebody does it, if they have the guts to do it, you know, in a sense, you say more power to them.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right. Before we get to Insider, not sure what you can and can't talk about, but can we discuss the Hall of Fame? I mean, there's some intriguing names on this list that seemingly have gained momentum over the last 2 years. Who should get a call if you can actually talk about it?
I don't mind talking about it. I have not revealed my ballot this year, but and I don't have it in front of me, so I don't know if I'll be able to reveal the whole ballot by memory, but maybe if you bring up the names, I'll know. I do vote for Barry Bonds because I do believe that narrative that he, you know, didn't do the steroids until after McGuire and Sosa and the others started doing them, and I thought he was a Hall of Famer even by that time. So I'm buying that. I'm not a guy who votes for steroid guys. He's the only one I vote for. So I do vote for Barry Bonds. You know, I'm not sure people will see it inconsistency because I don't vote for Clemens. I'm just not sure what to believe with Clemens, but I could see that case too. Maybe he didn't do steroids until he got to Toronto. Is he a Hall of Famer with 3 Cy Youngs and close to 200 wins with Boston? Probably. But you know, I'm not sure. I don't find it convincing because I don't really know what to believe. Bonds' case, I think, has been laid out bare for all of us to see. We know exactly when he started to do the steroids. So I vote for him. But then I vote for, you know, the other guys on the ballot, you know, the non-steroid guys, the guys who played it clean, you know, their cases, the case could be made for or against many of them. There are about 17 guys in the ballot, I thought, have a case one way or the other. And I did pick out a few that I vote for. Andrew Jones. I thought he was incredible defensively and did enough offensively to get there. I have voted for Scott Rolen. You know, people could say he's borderline. I think we've all kind of overlooked third base.
I like also Scott Rolen a lot.
Two-way player. So I do vote for him as well. And I hold my nose and vote for Schilling. I'm rooting against him getting in, as I've said. You know, it's not that he's conservative. That has nothing to do with it. It's just, you know, I mean, again, I vote for him anyway, so nobody can say to me, you don't vote for him because he's a conservative. So that case can't even be made. I've voted for him and continue to vote for him. You know, I just think he's reprehensible on many levels. I mean, to say that we pick guys because they're conservative or liberal, it's ridiculous. I mean, Mariano Rivera was publicly in favor of Donald Trump. He got 100% of the vote. I mean, that's the argument right there. Nobody said to themselves, Mariano Rivera, not only a conservative, a Trump conservative, maybe I won't vote. Nobody had nothing to do with it. Schilling is just reprehensible. You know, nothing to do with Republican or Democrat. But I do vote for him anyway. I don't know.
I'm glad, but in all seriousness, John, I'm glad you cleared that up because – I hear that narrative all the time. And if you know, like we know, it just doesn't make any sense. As you mentioned, Mariano Rivera, Trump supporter, Trump conservative, 100%. Everybody voted for him.
100. And, nobody. Held it against him.
Right. So I'm glad you got a chance to say that, because that is the narrative that is and will be mentioned as we get to the vote. Is there a chance you think?
No, Tony, it's ridiculous. I mean, you think these other guys that we voted in are Bernie bros? No, they're not Bernie bros. You know, it's not even, we don't look at it. I know which ones are conservative, I think, or liberal. In many cases, but it's not even in the equation, nor should it be.
What about a guy like Gary Sheffield? I look at him and I look at his career. I mean, he's right there, maybe a little bit ahead of Scott Rowland, in my opinion. What do you think?
Yeah. Well, as I said, there are 17 guys who I think have a case, and even some of the new guys, I thought, you know, there's a case to be made for Burley or Hudson or Hunter. I didn't end up voting for them. I actually think we shouldn't boot guys off the ballot if they get less than 5%.
I agree with that.
You know, let's keep considering, because how many times have we had guys go from like 10 or 15% to getting in, like Burt Blyleven and Larry Walker? They got in after starting at 10 or 15. So why do we have this cutoff at 5? It's ridiculous. Hunter, Burley, Hudson, they were fantastic players. Let's consider it. And you never know, minds could change. Now, I could have voted for them just to help try to keep them on the ballot, but I didn't think it would be fair, because I don't vote for Billy Wagner or Todd Helton or several other players who are, in my mind, at least as good. And, and just because they're going to stay on the ballot and the other guys won't, maybe potentially, Burley might, I'm not sure. But so I don't think that's, I don't like that rule. I will say, in Sheffield's case, I do think he is a steroid guy, so I don't vote for him. I do not vote for the steroid guys, except for the Barry Bonds, because, as I said, I do buy that narrative. You know, it's a judgment call in all this. I understand their inconsistencies. I do think Sheffield, on his accomplishments, on his numbers, he's a Hall of Famer. But I'd say that about Rafael Palmeiro. I'd say that about Mark McGwire. I'd say that about Sammy Sosa. I didn't vote for any of them. So I see that Gary Sheffield's getting a big pickup, and I don't know. I'm not sure why he's different than Sammy Sosa. I mean, they're both, to me, Hall of Famers based on what they did. How could you say Sammy Sosa is not a Hall of Famer? He had 3 years where he had 60 home runs. I mean, we're talking about fame here. There aren't too many players more famous than Sammy Sosa, and he never failed a test that resulted in a suspension either, just like Sheffield. But Sheffield's getting momentum. I guess his case is as a steroid guy has seemed to be less than Sosa, maybe. I don't know, because Sosa was called into the Congress. Yeah. But they both took steroids. I mean, Sheffield was connected to Balco, and then he said, he took them, but it was Bonds gave it to him. We're big boys here, you know. Yeah. He has good stories. That's my opinion of him. But, you know, all of them had fantastic careers. Sheffield, Palmeiro, McGwire, Sosa. And they're all in the same basket for me. Hall of Famer on their accomplishments, but steroids. I wonder a little bit about. Now, Sheffield had incredible talent, and they all did. You wonder how authentic. It's not a matter of morals. It's a matter of, you know, it's the bar is very high to get in the Hall of Fame. Steroids, you know, how much did it help you? We'll never know for sure. We know that it helped Barry Bonds a lot, because he turned from, you know, he was the best player in the game anyway, but he turned into Babe Ruth once he took the steroids. So we know it helps, but how much did it help McGwire, Sosa, Palmeiro, Sheffield? I don't think we'll ever know that. But to me, if you're a great player, but not an all-time great. And, you know, it's hard for me to vote for him, because I really think the steroid guys, they ended up making more money. They got more trophies. Do I reward them again? And it's not just a museum. It's a big reward, obviously, because that's why we talk about it. If we don't talk about it because it's a museum, we're not on here talking about the Louvre, right? We're talking about it because it's interesting who we're going to honor.
Right. And that should be held in high regard. All right, John, let's hop into this insider. You hit on it. We hit on it a little bit earlier with Realmuto, but let's start with Trevor Bauer. What do you got on him?
Trevor Bauer, well, there was a report that the Mets had offered the highest AAV salary in a contract. And as of today, as we do this podcast, that is incorrect. But it does feel like the Mets and the Angels might be the most likely. I think the Mets were trying to piece together a group of guys that they were interested in, including Jackie Bradley, Kike Hernandez, Brad Hand. But Hand is going to Washington. We know Kike's going to Boston. And so, and JBJ, we don't know at this point. So they're clearly, the other alternative was to get the one big player, and that's Bauer. So they're clearly looking at it. You know, they're debating and they're going to see what they can do, but they're clearly in the mix. And then the Angels, which need pitching. And we know Artie has gone for some big free agents in the past. And Quintana helps them, but they need pitching. So they're in the mix. And I think the Dodgers, they're willing to do. They love to have great players. And Bauer, let's face it, he's a great player. And
he is.
I think they'd be willing to do a 2 or 3 year deal, a shorter deal on a pretty high AAV. So, and I do believe he'd like to be in Southern California. So, you know, at this point, we had a guest today. We're going to say Angels, Dodgers, and Mets are the three most likely.
Marcell Ozuna.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. We have not heard much on him. He changed agents about 2 months ago. And it doesn't feel like the Braves are in the mix, but you got to consider because they're looking for a hitter. That's a possibility. I think the fact that they have the MLB and the union has not been able to come together on a deal that includes the universal DH probably hurts Ozuna because he was mostly a DH last year and obviously a great one. He did a great job with the Braves. So I think he's going to end up being disappointed, and I don't know where he's going to go. But, you know, I know that there are teams in both leagues, but I would look more toward the American League at this point. That would be my guess. Cruz also would have liked to have seen the DH in both leagues. He's one of the best hitters in baseball. We know the Twins are going to willing to do a one-year deal. I'm sure a pretty high number, but he's been looking around and will continue. White Sox makes sense for Cruz as well. I thought I'd throw in the DHs there.
Ryan Braun. I mean, he's another name that is a first-time free agency first time in his career. What do you have on Ryan Braun?
Yeah, you know, at this point, I think it's possible he may not play at the beginning. We'll see. I mean, I've not heard from him to this point, but I have not heard his name out there either, and I'm not sure, you know, with all the uncertainty that's going on about the DH and everything else, you know, I don't think he's retiring at this moment, but maybe he'll come on in the middle of the year, but I'm not sure that he's really actively looking at this moment. We'll see, because I think he can help somebody. I think he can still hit. And he did hit well at the end of last year.
He did. When he finally got healthy, he did seem like he was back to being Ryan Braun. All right, this one is the most intriguing name on the list, I believe, and that's Justin Turner. Fresh off a World Series win in L.A., he's getting up there in age. How is this going to work out between Justin Turner and the Dodgers?
Yeah, the Dodgers are still very optimistic on Justin Turner. So, you know, I mean, he fits in there beautifully. He's had 7 great years there. He seems like a Dodger. You know, I think we'll all be surprised if he goes elsewhere. I've heard there are 3 other teams that are he's willing to consider that are World Series contenders that are interested. We've heard that he's interested in a 4-year deal. The Dodgers would be willing to do 2, maybe 2 in an option. I'm going to be surprised if he's not a Dodger ultimately. The Jays are one of the other 3 teams. I don't know the other 2, but it'll be surprising if he leaves L.A.
All right. How about former Dodger Yasiel Puig? His name is kind of surfacing again.
Yeah. Somebody tweeted that the Yankees and the Marlins and the Royals were interested. Well, I've already eliminated the Yankees and the Marlins, much to the dismay of his agent, Rachel Luba. She's come back at me on Twitter a few times.
I've noticed you kind of been in some Twitter spats this offseason.
I don't spat back. I have no spatting back for me. I let her say what she wants to say. And I mean, you know, I'm not going to get into an imbroglio with an agent. It's not worth it. She can say what she wants to say. She's got a job to do and certainly wants to put the client in the best light possible. And it's not so easy with Yasiel Puig, though. But the fact that 3 teams came out and we've already eliminated 2 of them, You know, that doesn't bode well at this point. And the Marlins are not interested. I mean, the Yankees, maybe they had a discussion about it, but they need a left-handed hitter, not a right-handed hitter. And, you know, I think that Cashman would like to bring Brett Gardner back, and I'll be surprised if he's not back with the Yankees. But if it's not Gardner, it'll be a left, different left-handed hitter. They're not going to get any right-handed hitter. It's nothing against Yasiel Puig. Might be, but it's not going to – he being right-handed eliminates him from the Yankees. And the Royals, I'd be surprised. I'm not seeing that one either, but I haven't eliminated that one on Twitter. I think you might want to look for that in the next couple of days, though, and she'll come back at me when I eliminate the Royals, too.
I'm sure she will, and we'll all be waiting. All right, let's talk about a couple teams that may or may not have some things on the Ryan. Braves, let's start with there. You mentioned Marcell Ozuna still being on their radar a little bit, but what do you hear? Are you hearing from the Braves?
Yeah, well, we know that they're interested in Real Muto, and he's interested in them. But as I said, I think Real Muto is going to end up back with the Phillies. Again, I'll be surprised if he's not. They're already offering about $110 million. Braves aren't going to go there. They're going to go short-term for anybody, even a guy that they love like Real Muto. And they have Darnell, so they're pretty set at catcher. That would be tricky, a tricky fit, yeah. But they are interested, as Robert Murray had said. The interesting name I'd heard that they've at least kicked the tires on is Trey Mancini from the Orioles. He didn't play last year while he fought cancer, and just a terrific guy, a club leader. It's going to be hard to see the Orioles trading him. I do know that they're in sell mode. They talked about Santander with the Marlins, who are also looking for a hitter, and that's a possibility. The Orioles obviously are cost-cutting. Not a shock there. To trade Trey Mancini, the face of the franchise, I think that's going to be I think that'll be tough for them. Maybe I'm being naive, but I know the Braves are interested.
Let's stay in that National League East, the Marlins. This is a team that surprised all of us last year, and they're looking to get a little stronger. What are you hearing on their front?
Yeah, they're looking for a corner outfielder preferably a left-handed hitter, I believe, but they have very little money. Anthony Santander from the Orioles is a guy that they're talking about, as Rock Kabatko from Masson said. I think a trade is the way for them to go. They can give up prospects. The Marlins have done a good job gathering prospects. They do not have a lot of money. They spent the $10 million. I spent $10 million already, $10 or $12 million on Marte, picking up his option. They weren't able to keep their closer, Brandon Kinsler, who's only making $4 million if they picked it up. So, it's clear they have very little money to spend, but I think a trade is the most likely scenario. I mean, there are guys out there who would fit the bill and be that middle-of-the-order bat like Duval or Rosario, but my understanding is the Marlins just don't have the money for those guys. So I think they're going to go the trade route, and, hey, they were in the playoffs last year. They have the pitching. They don't need a ton of offense to succeed.
No, they don't. They don't. They have the pitching, and that can get you a long way. All right, let's end this podcast with the debacle, otherwise known as the DH extended playoffs conversation between players and owners. What happened on this? Why can't they come to an agreement on this?
That's a shame. It really is. They should be able to work something out. It seems like both sides want the universal DH. It's just the player side wants it more. And I think the MLB took the opportunity to offer the universal DH if they got the expanded playoffs. Now, the expanded playoffs really benefits both sides. Both sides would get more money, but it's obviously more work for the players. So, my understanding is this trade was offered before the holidays. So we're going back a long time, several weeks now. And recently, the union decided to reject it and just said, we're rejecting it. We don't take that offer. And there was no counter proposal. So at this point, the sides are not really doing too well. I'm going to be surprised if we get it done and get the universal DH. But to me, the expanded playoffs brings more money for everybody. The universal DH is something both sides want. Me, I happen to like the pitchers hitting. I like the strategy involved.
Me too.
But
I get it.
I get it. You know, it's better economically, and it's also takes a little bit of an injury risk away from the pitchers. At least that's the theory. So I get it. Both sides want it. It's a shame that you have something that both sides want and they still can't get it done. That's the shame of it.
That kind of speaks volumes to where we're at in terms of the relationship between owners and players. I'm hearing on the player's side a little bit, part of the reason why they don't want, or they're trying to negotiate this expanded playoffs, is they feel like the appetite for free agency will kind of come down. And it's already been a slow process over the last couple of years. Hopefully they actually get something done, because as much as I love pitchers hitting and I love the strategy, clearly the appetite is to have a DH on both sides. So
very good. That's not bad, Tony. I like that. You've done some reporting there.
Thank you. I put my John Heyman cap on every once in a while.
If there are more teams in, the theory could be that you could get in with a mediocre team. So, and that means you wouldn't go crazy for free agents. So, that does make some sense from the player standpoint. I tip my cap to you there.
that means a lot coming from you. I appreciate it, John. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of Big Time Baseball. John and I try to get back weekly, but sometimes with the news is not there during the offseason, it makes it a little bit difficult. So make sure you tune in. You can find our podcast wherever you get your podcast from. I'm at Tony Gwynn Jr. He's at John Heyman on Twitter. And catch us next week or the week after. We'll see.